Delve into the unknown as we uncover the truth behind government experiments, psychic warfare, and journeys beyond the constraints of time and space. Prepare to have your perceptions challenged, your curiosity ignited, and your imagination set free. Tonight on Newsworthy, two words and two question marks. You have scoured the podcast world and finally found us, Newsworthy with Steve and Jerry, where we delve into all things mysterious, macabre, or out of this world, and decide if they are truly newsworthy. Two words and two question marks.
Hello, I'm Ed Locke with USA Mortgage. Tax season is upon us. Did you know that 47% of Americans are planning to use their tax refunds for everyday expenses, home improvements, and vacations? What if you used your tax refund for a new home instead? Again, this is Ed Locke with USA Mortgage. Your tax refund can be used towards down payment, closing costs, or paying down existing debt to help get approved. So before you spend that tax refund, let's get together and see how to best utilize those funds to invest in your future and your new home. Call or text me at 502-680-0953. Again, that's 502-680-0953. NMLS ID 448908, DAS Acquisitions LLC, doing business as USA Mortgage, NMLS ID 227262. This is not a commitment to lend. Additional terms and conditions apply. USA Mortgage is an equal housing lender.
Mr. Jerry.
Hello, hello. How are you this evening?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We are almost on time today.
How about that? Miracles will never cease.
I'm telling you what, that's impressive.
Like, I agree.
Wow. Used to be when we did this live, you know, everybody was, you know, we weren't on at a particular time. We were getting phone calls. Yeah. Now,
we had two or three people that were there waiting, and you're right. You'd be getting text messages if we're 2-3 minutes late. Text message. Where are you guys? What's happening? What's going on?
Yeah. Are you okay? Are you having technical issues? Yeah. Which we are attempting to fix our studio a little bit, and the gremlins came back for whatever reason there for a minute. It was like, I don't know, we were having all kinds of like weird issues. But
well, last week and then for the very beginning of this episode, back again. Yeah. Talking about being impressed, we're on time. Talking about being impressed in general, my wife is furious at my next door neighbor. She's sunbathed topless in the backyard. Personally, I'm on the fence.
Really?
Not saying I'm impressed, just I'm on the fence.
Oh, I see. Well, there you go, Mr. Jerry. You got room for another guy to perch up there?
I'm sure we can make room.
You know, Brett's not been with us for a couple of weeks.
Sadly, that's correct.
However, I did get to see him yesterday. We went to the zoo.
Really?
Yeah. You know, there was a piece of toast in one of the cages.
Toast, huh?
Yeah. I asked the zookeeper about it. He said it was bred in captivity.
Oh, bred in captivity. Yeah, I like that one. That's a good one. Bred in captivity. Good explanation for the bread.
So I gotta ask, I know it's off topic, and I specifically have been asking you about this the entire time we've had, you know, dinner or whatever, because I wanted to get your honest opinion. Okay. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul.
Oh, that's not, I mean, that's a matter of how many seconds does Paul last.
It's a real fight, right? I mean, that's the thing. I don't even think it matters if they have headgear.
I don't. And how old is Tyson at this point?
57.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
He could be 67. I'd give you the same answer. As long as his physical condition hasn't changed dramatically. If he progresses in age, as people normally do from 57 to 67, I'll give you the same answer.
Power is the last thing to go. George Foreman is a good example of that.
That's my whole point.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson can lose 70% and he's still knocking Paul's out.
Yeah, I agree. I can't imagine a scenario, unless this goes 12 rounds or some stupid,
come into play.
And Paul just dances around and just doesn't let Tyson get close. Yeah,
I have no idea what kind of stamina that Tyson's got now, if he has an exercise regime, anything like that.
His videos he's putting out are brutal. Like, he makes me feel bad. He's 20 years older than I am, and I'm thinking here. I watch his videos, and I'm like...
Oh, he's less than 10, so...
Huh?
I don't know who you think you're talking to. He's less than 10 older than you. I know how old you are.
So, anyway, and I'm thinking, gosh, I suck.
100% agree.
These guys out here knocking the crap out of bags. And I mean,
to be honest, when have we ever in our entire life compared ourselves to Mike Tyson not come up with the same result?
There was this one comedian that I used to like. And he was like, this is back during Tyson's prime. And he was like, what would it be like to be Mike Tyson? The baddest man to ever step foot on the planet. You could go to a Christmas party and see the big food spread. And you've got the president, the pope, and four or five queens and all the royalty in the world at this Christmas party. And you can walk right up to the food and put your balls in the butter dish. And who's going to tell you to move them? Nobody.
Have you ever seen the one interview when the interviewer asked some question? And it wasn't that bad, but he took it really the wrong way and just went off on this guy. Cussed him up one side, down the other, told him he's a worthless piece of crap, and they're live on air.
Oh, wow.
Television.
I think I do remember that.
Yeah, it was obvious. He was looking at that dude exactly like you're saying. Like, what the hell are you going to do about it? Nothing.
Crazy. I think Paul's gotten in over it. He's letting his ambition outweigh his...
Big time.
Because
you were talking about the comedian earlier. I remember a comedian talking about, he says, you always hear these people say, just chit chat, two guys. Would you get in the ring with him for $1 million? And everybody's like, yeah. He'll knock me out. He's like, are you freaking stupid? It's not will he knock you out, it's will he kill you while he's doing it.
Right. Is he going to literally knock your head off of your shoulders?
Yeah. I mean, will you have
how many broken bones and orbital sockets are you going to be damaged because this man hits you?
Yeah.
They don't call you Iron Mike for no reason.
He's not a bad dude. If you have any doubt, if you're a young fella that didn't get the same fight,
just
go to YouTube and watch a few of his fights.
Just YouTube it. And, I was watching, I don't remember what it was, and some talking about guys that we saw growing up, and while we say they're the GOAT or whatever. I saw a whole montage of Michael Jordan when he played for the Wizards, and he was smoking these dudes, and he's like almost 50 at this point, and just dropping bombs, 50 points, and people are like looking at him like, really? And he's got all the greats, especially, they all have one thing in common. They know it, and they run that mouth. They just talk. And you can watch the video. I never noticed it when I watched him play. But the world's worst for that. And anyone who played against him will tell you was Larry Bird. Larry Bird would just talk. Get inside their head. But Michael Jordan was just, even when he wasn't in his prime, when he was playing with the Wizards, was just a dominant force.
Have you ever heard the Muggsy Bogues, Michael Jordan story?
No. I like Muggsy Bogues, though.
What was he, 5'6"?
Yeah, he's a little mini thing.
According to him, this ended his career. Playoff series, he's playing against Jordan. Game is tied, or I think the Bulls are up by one, maybe. down in the last few seconds. They throw the ball to Bogues. Michael starts to run out, stops, looks at him, and says, "Go ahead and shoot it, you effing midget."
Wow.
He shoots it and just backs away. And he, Muggsy Bogues, took the shot, missed it, and said he never got his confidence back ever again.
Wow.
He said, I played for a little while longer. That effectively was the end of my career.
Jeez.
He said, he destroyed me mentally. He said, I never could overcome that. He said, this man looked at me with such disdain, such disgust, like, you are not even worth me taking one step to guard you. And he's like, I just could never mentally come back from that.
That's crazy.
And that's himself telling the story on, you know, that was his Jordan story.
Wow.
Yeah. You're right. Those guys had an incredible level of self-confidence.
Tom Brady was the same way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you'd see him take a sack or something and get up and just talk snot to the...
Well, they said that he didn't talk snot. He was smart enough to be like, good hit.
Yeah.
But he was trying to... I remember hearing him say, the last thing you want to do is piss these guys off and tell them that didn't hurt. They'll right. try to hit you 10 times harder next time.
Right.
So he said, I'd be like, you know, good hit. Keep trying. Maybe you'll get me. But he wouldn't diss them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty smart when you're looking at some other dudes trying to kill you.
360 pounds yeah. and just can bench press a truck.
and, you know, who knows what they're... How many seconds it took them to run the 40-yard dash? For the size of some of those guys, yeah. their speed is incredible.
Yeah, it is insane.
Yeah.
Other than my personal favorite, and I got to say this, and we can cut out because Ramona's being dumb too. My favorite commercials of all time are the Kmart ship commercials. Okay, by far, hands down. There's not another commercial that comes anywhere close.
A ship.
Yeah. The second favorite commercial are the Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, McDonald's commercials. Those were brilliant. Anywho.
Those are good.
So tonight we've got some, I'm going to visualize what we're doing tonight, Jerry.
No pun intended.
Oh. We're going to be talking tonight about miraculous people who can see the future.
Yeah. Good fake job of being a seer. Is that what they're called?
What? No, that was me told. I had no idea what we were doing. That was
you channeling.
Right? I was channeling my inner seer.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Project Stargate. And we're going to talk about the Montauk Project tonight. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Montauk.
Oh, well. Well, that was weird.
Apple Watch is talking to you.
Yeah, it's telling me that I shouldn't. It was trying to record our entire conversation for whatever reason.
Very nice.
Well, they shut that off.
I can tell you why. It, too, is a seer. It was looking into the future and saw what an awesome episode it was going to be. And decided that it was worth recording. So, yeah.
Of course it's going to be we worth don't have recording. To
go look in history for a seer. You have one on your hand.
I have one. Well, and I actually have one in my family, I believe. You know, first of all, Project Stargate, they had about 15, 20 different people. And they had that, you know, cycling through. We'll get into the details. But have you ever known anyone with... You know, talk about women's intuition or gut feelings.
That was reliable? No.
Really?
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people who claim they're good at it. And from my experience of looking, no, they suck. It's kind of like a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about palm readers, and Brett summed it up pretty well. He's like, yeah, you know, they're going to give me your palm and. Oh, I see a relationship in your past that didn't end well. Well, that's about 98% of the people that's ever lived. I see you've lost someone. Well, that's about everyone that's ever lived. It was a woman, an old woman with gray hair. Come on, you're not telling the future. You're telling the experiences of everyone that's ever lived. So, yeah.
I can actually see you trying to do that with like a swarmy hat on and you know... Like a big jewel in your forehead, maybe.
Sure, I can do it.
That should be your Halloween costume next year, or this year, I guess.
I can promise you, I'd make it look good.
Okay, let's not exaggerate.
You
too
doubt?
Much. Yeah, a little
you
bit.
Doubt me?
A little bit.
A little bit, he says.
So anyway,
okay.
I tell this story, and I've told this story for years, and you probably know the story, and you've heard it, and you're like, roll your eyes, and that's fine, whatever. I used to work at a company called Alco Ducklaw. I was working in New Lebanon, Ohio. Had to come home. Don't remember if it was a funeral, a wedding, a birthday party, Christmas. I don't remember the reason I came home. Came home and my Aunt Becky was there. And my Aunt Becky looks at me and she goes, when are you going to tell us? And I was like, tell you what? She goes, about your move out west. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Probably use some different language because, back then I was a whole different person than I am now. But she goes, well, whatever. You'll see. And that was that. So we do the birthday, funeral, whatever, holiday, and I honestly don't remember what that was. Go back to work the next Monday, and boss calls me in the office. He says, congratulations, I've got good news and bad news. And I was like, okay. He's like, the good news is you're promoted. I'm like, okay, great. What's the bad news? The bad news is you are now the owner of the longest corporate move that Alco has ever paid for. We're moving you from New Lebanon, Ohio to Salmon, Idaho. And there, I didn't know. So there was no way she would have known. It's not like my boss picked up the phone and gave her a call. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So, yeah, and she'd done that a couple of times.
I remember you saying it. Yeah, it wasn't a one-off. She'd done it before.
Yeah, she had, when Josh was in the womb, if you will, before I knew, she knew. So, just weird things like that, and some people I really feel are gifted. Now, if those people are able to, and that's what Stargate Project was all about. Some of the people that were in Stargate Project were gifted, and they helped train them as to how to use their powers or their abilities, if you will. Some of them were not. They were good at wasting the government's time. And we'll get into some of the details, but I want to save room to talk about Joseph McMonagle, because he's probably the most prolific of the bunch and one of the most mind-blowing. You said you wanted to see something that was crazy. I'm going to show you some crazy stuff. But anyway.
Sounds great.
Huh?
Sounds great. Looking forward to hearing.
So what is the Stargate Project? The Stargate Project was a secret U.S. Army unit. And it was established in 1978 at Fort Meade in Maryland by the Defense Intelligence Agency. At the time, that was the DIA. That later changed to the CIA, obviously. It was also part of SRI International, which was a California contractor, to investigate the potential for psychic phenomena in military and domestic intelligence gathering applications. The project and its precursors, or sister projects, which had went through various code names, Stargate, Gondola Wish, Grill Flame, Center Lane, Project SF, Sunstreak, Scanet. These were all the different names that this project went by, and all the way up until 1995, when it was finally canceled. So this project, which had a budget of millions of dollars, was funded by the CIA for over 20 years. That should tell you a couple of things. Either they believed that it worked well enough to devote the funds to it, or they didn't want to lose their money and just kept throwing money down the toilet, which I find that very hard to believe.
Well, I think there's a third option. Maybe they thought it had a ton of potential, but never actually did work the way that they had thought.
And, or here's the other fourth option we're not, and this is the option that most conspiracy theorists believe.
No. They would come up with yet another option? Surely not.
Yeah.
Say it's not.
Well, that the project has been, is still classified and
still
is
going still, on.
Still today. Going on. and because it is useful. And, you know, the Freedom of Information Act has changed a lot of the way the government has to do a lot of their cover-ups. They have to acknowledge at some point things that they would never acknowledge before, even in a heavily redacted, you know, page. After a certain number of years, even classified information is no longer classified. So,
no, that's not true. Depending upon what it is, if it is determined to still be of a high national security interest, there's no deadline.
You want me to give you an example of that? Sure. You're saying,
sure.
The John F. Kennedy files.
And that was reviewed. And there's still part of that that's not been redacted. Or
released.
They have released
Donald
a lot.
President Trump actually renewed it for another 40 years as classified.
But a lot of it has been released, but a ton of it has been redacted. So whatever parts are considered of a, you know, still a national secret, they're not giving it away. Yeah, and that was what, in the 60s?
Right.
So you're 60 years ago.
And it's going to be another 40 years. So 100 years later, it means it's national security. You know, it must be pretty.
Well, part of that relates to the security provided to presidents. And supposedly part of it, if they just declassify everything, from what I've read, would have to give away a lot of secrets that the Secret Service says, we don't want this published. This is some of these things we still do today.
I get that, but all they have to do is watch any number of movies, and they're going to figure out a bunch of stuff.
Sure, but not everything.
No.
I mean, you can see reasons for it, but that's not the problem. The problem is there's too many cases that's been proven where the government, for literally no reason, decides to make up crap, lie about stuff. That's the reason and the basis for a ton of the conspiracy theories. It's not the stuff where they have a legitimate interest and need to lie.
Right. So why did we... Why is Stargate Project a project? In the 1970s, the Soviet Union was spending roughly 60 million rubles annually on psychotronic research in response to claims, and in response to the claims that the Soviet Union had actually produced results. That's why I can't even speak today. Stargate Project was created. The CIA, the DIA decided they should investigate and know as much about it as possible. Various programs were approved yearly and refunded accordingly. Reviews were made semi-annually at the Senate and the House Select Committee level. Work results were reviewed and remote viewing was attempted, with the results being kept secret from the viewer. It was thought that if the viewer was shown, they would incorrect. That doesn't make any sense. I wrote that funny. Sorry. they were felt like if they showed that, they would damage the viewer's confidence and skill, so they didn't show them the results of some of their work. They didn't say, hey, you're only accurate 10% of the time. They wanted these guys to go in and have the most accurate.
So don't destroy their self-confidence.
Right, right.
In the middle of the
project. You want to give them the best opportunity.
Yeah, build them up.
Now, how was this project initiated? It was first initiated when they first started the project. They would actually have a guy come into a room. The room had nothing on the walls. It was very much like a prison cell, except it had a desk. And they're obviously not prisoners. They're army officers for the most part. Guy would come in, hand you, say you're the seer, a paper that just has coordinates on it, and tell you to draw what you saw. They even got to a point that they decided having the guy come in could be an opportunity for cheating. It
or
could be
bias.
An opportunity for bias.
To
it
be
could be... an opportunity for a keen-eyed individual to gather nuggets of information from the person bringing it in. So what they decided to do at that point, They had slots in the doors, like also like a prison or a jail where they would put meals through. They would walk past with the doors closed and just slide those in through that slot. And just
to make sure that body language or
was none of that.
A glance didn't give away right. certain information. Gotcha.
Now, this project, for the most part, was right, according to the CIA, 15% of the time. Okay? That's overall, over the scope of 20 years. They had a few, and you know, those numbers, when you're talking about 50, 60 people that have gone through the program, and if half of those people or more had no ability whatsoever, they're going to bring those numbers down, obviously. The people, however, that were right, they tended to be right 45 to 65% of the time, which is why the number came back up. You know,
right.
And I want to cover a couple of the people
who had decent success rates?
Yes. The one guy had the biggest success rate, and I don't want to take up a lot of time because I know we want to get the we're doing two big projects today.
No. <I've been> on one big one, yours.
It's not really that big.
A lot bigger than mine. Never mind.
What?
Never mind.
Well, we're not doing LSD tonight, so... Anywho, one of the guys that I want to talk about tonight, and you can go on YouTube, you can find videos of this guy, and he's a pretty coarse guy. He's an old Army chief, warrant officer. His name was Joseph McMonagle. Joseph was born January 11th, 1946. He's 78 years old. He served in the U.S. Army from 1964 to 1984. He accrued the rank of chief warrant officer, and he was assigned to the Stardegate project for a long time. He won the Legion of Merit Award, if that tells you anything.
Absolutely.
So this was not a guy who was a chump, if you will. He wasn't a guy that, you know, when you start talking about old Army guys and warrant officers, these are not guys that BS a lot. They're pretty cut and dry. So anyway, what is so special about Joe McMonagle? Gosh, he's got a hard name to say. He
does. Very weird name.
It's a hard name to keep saying.
You're doing justice to it far better than I could.
Ramona. Hey, stop that. We had to bring her in. She's being a diva tonight. That's okay. If y'all don't know, if you've never had a poodle, they believe that everything in the world revolves around them. And if it's not, then they get very upset. So, you know, that's the reason for her meltdown tonight. I apologize. Anyway, back to Joe McMonagle. So, Joe, in one particular, are you ready to be blown away, Jerry?
Absolutely.
Let me blow you away. So, in one session of seeing, they gave Joe some coordinates. They said, we need to know what you see at these coordinates. Stop that. And so Joe goes and he starts drawing, and he draws in his eyes, he sees a submarine, a Russian submarine. Biggest submarine he's ever seen. 2 football fields long. Has a flat top and a flat bottom, which is unheard of in the sub world. Most submarines are round. It helps prevent the pressure. Had a whole new propulsion system that had never been seen before. He drew particular tubes the way that our tubes on our subs are, that are our first strike nuclear submarines, part of our nuclear triad. And here's the thing. It was about 1/4 of a mile from any water source. So
he's sitting on dry land?
In a building on dry land. And so when he got done with the drawing, he sent it up to the general. The general looks at it and he says, this is rubbish. And he even writes it, rubbish, on the report and sends it back to the handler. And the handler's like, okay. So he takes it back to Joe. Joe, who's got a bit of a, we were talking about what goats have. They have a little bit of a little swagger about them.
Right.
Well, Joe saw that, and he saw what the general had wrote on there, that it was rubbish, and he said, he went back into his sight or his whatever stance, if you will, and he came back and he wrote on there 112 days and gave it back to him to send back to the general. Just for kicks and giggles. Now, the time, 112 days is roughly 4 months, right? 4 months later, now, a quarter mile from the ocean, or from the water, in a building, completely surrounded by other buildings and dry and everything. In 4 months' time, someone at the agency decided to acquire and utilize a spy satellite and take over these coordinates. And what did they find when they did that? In 4 months, the Russians had dug a canal from the water all the way to that building. And when the satellite went over those coordinates, they caught a glimpse of the newest Russian submarine created.
And it looked like the drawing, and it's now in water.
Not only did it look like it, it was identical to it. Everything about it was The general who wrote rubbish on the report said that there's no way that the submarine can have a flat top and a flat bottom. It wouldn't survive crush depth. This one had a flat top and a flat bottom. This one had a brand new, she is melting down today. I'm about to just throw her out on the back porch. This one had a brand new propulsion system that no one had ever seen before. This one had upswept tubes that made it a first strike weapon as part of like our subs, part of their nuclear triad. This one was 2 football fields long, which was largest submarine ever. And just in case you want to get a visual of what this submarine looks like, all you have to do is watch a little movie that's been made. Ever heard of the movie The Hunt for Red October?
Sure.
That's what this submarine, that submarine was the submarine that was, the submarine that Joe McMichael had visualized was the Red October. Pretty impressive stuff.
I didn't remember it being square.
Yeah, sure is.
It's been a long time since I saw that movie.
Yeah, great movie, by the way. If you haven't watched it, fantastic movie. But that was the submarine. 100% dead on accuracy.
She's just not going to stop. She's going to let you know she's not happy with something you're doing tonight.
I know it. I want to talk about another time Joe McMonagle was 100% accurate. After he'd retired, he's done these visualizing. You talked about at dinner, do these people have motive? Well, Joseph's got a lot of books he's done, and he sells books. So it's got his name out there a little bit now. There is a, I've lost myself, Jerry. I apologize.
Are you looking for his book?
Huh?
Are you looking for the book that he wrote?
No, I was looking to see. I don't want to tell this wrong, but I guess I don't have much choice. So anyway, Joe was retired, and okay. I'm trying to do this because I've lost my notes and I apologize. I've lost my place in my notes because of Ramona. She's really got me flustered tonight. I apologize for that. I think it was Texas. Sheriff called up Joe. He had heard about through some of the books, hey, this guy might be able to help. He's a seer. He's a psychic. He's a blah, blah, blah. Calls up Joe, gets his number, calls him up. It's late wherever Joe's at. He's several states away. Calls up Joe. Joe answers. He's like, hey, this is Sheriff so-and-so from, and I want to say it was Texas. I won't swear to that. It could be wrong. I've got a 5-year-old little boy that's missing. It's getting dark. His parents are freaking out. Can you help? Joe says, give me a second. Let me think on it for a second. 5 seconds later, he calls back, or he's on the phone. He says, okay, send a deputy out this road. Now, you got to understand, Joe has never been to this area, to where this sheriff is. He doesn't know the layout. He's never been here. This is in the 1980s. We don't have Google. He's not typing it up and looking, okay? He says, send a deputy out this road for how many ever miles. Tell your deputy to get out of the car with a compass. Set his compass to 390 and walk 1,204 steps. When he walks 1,204 steps, tell him to yell out the boy's name. The boy will answer. So sheriff says, okay, we'll do it. I mean, what do they have to lose? The boy's lost. He's out in the woods. It's getting to be dark. He's 5 years old. So he sends a deputy out. Well, Joe says, in interviews, you can see Joe talking about this story. Joe says, wasn't 15 minutes later, somebody calls him right back. Hey, it's the sheriff again. My deputy just got out of missing kid training and says that the directions you gave him sends him straight up a hill, and his training tells him that kids will never walk up hills when they're lost. Joe gets a little huffy. He's like, you tell him to walk 1,204 steps up the hill, if there's a hill there, and call out the boy's name. And hangs up the phone, slams it down, because he's angry. He's trying to go back to sleep. 15 minutes later, phone rings again. We found him. At the top of the hill, there was a small cabin. And that cabin, while no one lived there or was staying there, had a light on. And the little boy's dad had always told him, if you ever got lost, go to the light and stay there. That boy was up there outside of that cabin waiting. And that's where the sheriff's deputy found him.
Go figure.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, Joe, for all of his good, you know, in this, he'll even tell you that he's accurate on his sight and his seeing between 45 and 65% of the time. But when he is right, he's 100% right. So I know that's kind of weird numbers, but
no, not really. Half the time he's right. And when he is, it's very good, very detailed notes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you can also see if they had, you know, a couple of Joes and everyone else is 5, 10, 15% and maybe not nearly the details, you can kind of see where eventually the CIA would say, we can't determine where this is going to be able to be used reliably in the future. We don't know where to go with this. If you only got one or two guys out of the entire project that's, you know, of really good accuracy, where do you take the project from there?
Right. I agree. But then you get a guy like Joe, and it's like, can we really afford to let this guy go work for someone else? Right?
Yeah.
You know, when he's finding top secret state-of-the-art submarines. You know, he's also been contracted to find missing subs that have went under the water and was lost, downed aircraft. I mean, these are some of the things that these guys were charged with doing, not just to try to find other state secrets, but to find missing kids, to find missing people, to locate downed aircraft in sunk submarines or ships that are in trouble. To have a 45 to 65% accuracy rate, I'll take that when I've got nothing else.
There's a lot of police departments you hear over the years that have used psychics, seers, whatever you want to call it, something in that order. And you can imagine if you had, you know, someone kidnapped and you believe their life is, you know, in mortal danger, that you would go to whatever lengths you could come up with to try to save them. Not only in the past, there are many places that still utilize similar resources. Yeah.
McMonagle even himself has said, everybody wants to use psychics, but nobody wants to be caught dead standing next to a psychic. It's like an automatic ridicule factor. It's like, oh yeah, psychics. Anybody associated with it can kiss their career goodbye. That was his own direct quote. And, you know, I can certainly see that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Crazy, I think.
Well, the military is going to be very logic-based. And, you got Joe and one or two more who have decent odds. And by decent, we're saying 50%, you know, maybe, overall. And the rest of them are far less than that. So, yeah. If you're military, you can't be making military decisions based on 10, 15, 20% accuracy. No. You're right one out of five times. Well, you can't send men to
fight.
To fight when there's wrong
right.
four now, times out of five.
As a CIA, however, you can afford a little bit of that. In the military, not so much, I believe. You know.
No, I agree with that, especially when they're finding friggin' submarines.
Yeah.
New, undiscovered, unheard of. New design submarines. Yeah.
That's insane. Actually, that was one of my favorite movies. Probably one of my top 10 movies. So when I heard that, I was like, holy buckets, it's amazing.
Very much so.
So anyway, tell us about Project Montauk. Right?
Montauk. Yes. Well, have you heard of the Hamptons?
The Hamptons?
The Hamptons.
Yeah, I've been there.
You've been there?
Yeah.
Where is it? Just geographically, if you're trying to tell someone who's going to sit down at a map, where do they find the
Northeast?
Hamptons? Northeast of what?
Massachusetts?
No, it's actually New York City.
Oh, okay.
It's on Long Island.
Never mind. I haven't been there.
It is.
I've been to Hilton Head. Sorry. Big difference.
Hilton Head. That's South Carolina.
Yeah.
No, Massachusetts.
I know, I'm all messed
the
up.
The Hamptons is, if you're in Long Island, New York, part of New York City, and you decide to go east, you run into the Hamptons, okay? And
right.
We've all heard of the Hamptons, right? Billionaire's Lane, Jerry Seinfeld, Alec Baldwin, Gwyneth Paltrow, Brooke Shields, Beyonce, Robert De Niro, Jennifer Lopez, Steven Spielberg, Paul McCartney. Those are just a few of the rich and famous people that call the Hamptons home. But we're not talking about the Hamptons. If you go another 30 miles east of that, you come to Camp Hero. Now, it was originally commissioned by the United States Army in 1942, and it was originally a coastal defense station that was disguised as a fishing village. And its location was chosen to prevent a political or a potential invasion of New York City from the sea. Once again, think about it. New York City, Hamptons, you know, 20, 30 miles east. And then another 30 miles east of that, you've got the very tip, right where it hits the ocean. That is where the Montauk Project or Montauk, New York is.
I'm going to check that out because next year I hope to take a cruise from New York. It goes to Bermuda. That'll be
there
cool.
You go.
Because I've never been to New York. And all my friends that I want to go with, all of them say, I've been there. I don't want to go back. So,
period.
Yeah.
I was the opposite. I think it was a great place to visit. Would love to go back. Absolutely would never dream of living there.
No, heck no.
But great place to visit. Just say, if you can imagine, if you can think of it, they've probably got something there.
Yeah.
So great place to visit, great place to vacation in my experience. But again, it was originally commissioned by the United States Army in 42 as a coastal defense station. Now, to protect it from enemy bombers and German spies and fishing boats, the whole base was originally built to look like a New England fishing village. For instance, concrete bunkers had windows painted on them, and ornamental roofs had fake dormers. The gymnasium was made to look like a church that still exists today, that even has a faux steeple.
Oh, wow.
It was built to look, if a plane flew over, not to look like a military base, just like a typical little fishing village. Excuse me. By 1951, the Army had turned it over to the Air Force, and they were using it as a radar station. Again, a highly, you know, military strategic location, 50, 60 miles east of New York City, as far east as you can get without running into the ocean. And by December, or on December 1st, 1953, it was renamed as the Montauk Air Force Station. In 1978, the United States Air Force submitted a proposal to the Carter administration to close the base, as at that point it was largely obsolete due to the emergence of orbital satellite reconnaissance technology. And it was officially shut down. The Montauk installation was officially shut down on January 31st, 1981, and ownership was eventually transferred. It became the Campiro State Park, and to this date it is still operated by the New York State Office of Parks and Recreation. So yeah, that's how it originally went from being the Army base, eventually an Air Force radar installation base, into what it is today, and it's a state park. But that isn't the end of the story. In fact, that's where our story begins. The Montauk Project was claimed to be a series of secret government projects and experiments that were reportedly conducted at the Campiro or Montauk Air Force Station there on Montauk, Long Island. Now, a ton of the details, the vast majority of the details from this project began circulating in the 80s, and it come from a man by the name of Preston Nichols. He claimed to have remembered repressed memories, and we'll get to that later, but he claimed to have remembered memories that have been repressed of his own involvement in the project. Conspiracy theorists led by him were claiming that the Montauk Project was an extension of the 1943 Philadelphia experiment, which was also known as Project Rainbow. And that, if you're not familiar with it, was supposedly when a United States Navy destroyer ship was teleported from the Philadelphia Naval Shipyard to Norfolk, Virginia, for several minutes before it returned. Now, I said several minutes. It was several minutes according to time in this universe. According to the witnesses that claimed to be on the ship, they lived in the alternate universe for several years. And this was supposedly Project Montauk was just a continuation of that original experiment. The witnesses claimed that this began as a United States Navy research that was attempting to figure out how to make ships invisible so they couldn't be seen. Literally invisible. Not invisible to radar, literally invisible. But that somehow, in the process, that this ship had been inexplicably teleported in the process. Now, Mr. Nichols began writing a series of books about it. Amazing how many of these people have some financial involvement, isn't it? But he started with a series of books called the Montauk series. The first one was called the Montauk Project, Experiments in Time. And he discussed experiments that included researching topics such as time travel, teleportation, mind control, alien species, even faking the Apollo moon landings. So, yeah, he was one of the original conspiracy theorists who was saying that the moon landings were fake. Now, remember that we mentioned that this was supposedly a continuation of the original Philadelphia experiment or Project Rainbow. Right. He said that the surviving researchers from the original project had begun to discuss how to take the project in a new direction with an eye to continuing the research into technical aspects of manipulating the electromagnetic bottle that had supposedly been used to make the first ship invisible, which turned into the teleportation. According to the book, here are some of the claims that he made about the project. Homeless people were abducted and subjected to huge amounts of electromagnetic radiation.
And LSD.
Very few survived. Most died, yes. Experiments were conducted in teleportation.
And LSD.
A porthole in time was created, which allowed researchers to travel anywhere in time or space.
This was developed.
This was developed into a stable time tunnel, again, to get more LSD. Quite enigmatic, wouldn't you say? Such claims, I can't imagine. He also claimed that contact was made with extraterrestrials through that same time tunnel, and technology was exchanged with them, which enhanced the project. And this allowed broader access to hyperspace and LSD. That Steven says, did I throw that one in?
Yeah.
Another claim was that an alien monster traveled through the time tunnel, destroyed equipment, and devoured some of the researchers. The tunnel had to be shut down, and the creature was destroyed. He claimed that mind control experiments were conducted, and runaway boys were abducted and brought to the base, where they underwent excruciating periods of both physical and mental torture in order to break their minds. Then their minds were reprogrammed. Many were supposedly killed in the process and buried on site. Remember when I said that this claim, this began to come out years later when he supposedly had remembered repressed memories? He claimed that he was, in fact, a runaway boy, that he was one of them that had been subjected to these experiments, and that he had been reprogrammed afterwards.
If you've ever seen the movie The Manchurian Candidate, that person came from the Montauk Project.
Well, I've got a lot better than closer analogy than that for you here in just a minute. I have saw it, and you're right, but that's a more indirect.
Right.
There's a much closer connection I'll make in a minute. Staff from the Camp Hero site supposedly traveled to the USS Eldridge. That, again, was 15 years earlier, the Philadelphia experiment. The USS Eldridge was a ship that got teleported. Supposedly, people from this Camp Hero site traveled to the USS Eldridge and shut down the generators, which caused the ship to return to the Philadelphia Naval Yard in 1943 and caused that time tunnel to collapse.
Oh, wow.
Remember, they were gone supposedly for a few minutes, but the two people that were saying that this happened claimed that they lived in this alternate universe for years. This claims this is how they were brought back. It was only by people from Camp Montauk that were able to time travel, meet up with this teleported ship to destroy the generators. That's what brought it back.
Wow.
Another claim. After the experiments were completed, or the destruction of the facility, depending upon which book you read, because it did vary depending on which book he wrote, the facility ended up being closed for good. All the staff were brainwashed, shot, or sworn to absolute secrecy, and all records were destroyed. According to some stories, research continues at the site to this day. Again, same story we heard from some of your conspiracy theorists with your project.
And MK Ultra, for a lot of people, that is what Montauk became and is still in being used today.
To what now? Say that again.
MK Ultra. LSD.
Yeah. Now, if any of this sounds familiar, there's another good cause for that. A much closer analogy, direct analogy than the Manchurian Candidate is if you happen to have seen the Netflix TV series called Stranger Things, one of the more popular series to come out in recent years, Winona Ryder stars in it. This was inspired by the somewhat dubious claims of the Montauk Project. And at one point in time, Montauk was used as the title, not Stranger Things. It originally was called Montauk. Now, there are a few problems with this whole story. Number one, the witnesses are very limited. Primarily, it's the author of this book, Preston Nichols, and another guy named Al Bielek, who, again, was part of the original Philadelphia experiment that claimed to be on that ship. Both of them were pretty wild, some really strange claims. Now, the Camp Hero facility was expanded, according to the books, by as many as 12 levels. Several hundred workers were involved. Keep in mind, there's a Long Island. It comes to a narrow point. For several miles, there's only one road getting in or out.
Oh, wow.
These claims are that there was this huge construction project. They went down multiple levels into the ground, hundreds of workers, but yet no one saw any trucks. No one saw any construction workers. No one saw any construction going on at any point in this time. Would be kind of hard to, unless you're shipping every one of these people in from the sea, it would be basically impossible for any of that to happen. There's also the fact that we said earlier that Nichols used the story as the basis for a series of six books that he called the Montauk series. So there's certainly a financial incentive or motive, if you will, for him to come up with a great story. Now, as far as that, it's safe to say that he did do that. You know, if nothing else, one of the more successful TV series in recent time was loosely based on this series. So if you don't give it anything else, I think it absolutely qualifies as a great story. To be honest, I think that's all it is. It's a series of good books and a good story. There's very little evidence other than these two men and some books they decided to write. There's little evidence. There's very little, if any, that can be corroborated. When you read the preface to the book, it basically says that. It basically says that there is hard facts, which are things that can be irrefutably substantiated. It says that there's very little in the book that would meet that criteria. It says that they're using soft facts. So if that's the best you can claim yourself, that you're using soft facts, yeah, that's pretty weak. But
I understand. Nice story. I understand that, you know, this particular book and this particular set of circumstances is pretty weak. However, the CIA has admitted to doing illegal human experiments on people and populations before, both witting and unwitting before. Oh, absolutely. Especially, you know, I was kind of joking around with the LSD, but MK Ultra, which was a program that came from Project Montauk, has been admitted to. You know, they've apologized for it. They, you know, there's documentation showing that they would force people and populations to take the LSD.
At Project Montauk?
No, at MK Ultra.
Okay, yes.
But what I'm saying is,
no, I don't doubt that.
The fact that they're willing to do those things lends some credence to that.
Well, it's kind of like I said earlier. You remember when I was talking about yours? The biggest reason for all these conspiracy theories in the first place is the amount of times, the number of times, the willingness for the government to lie when there didn't even need to be lies.
Right.
Go and look at the Area 51 and some of the original lies that were told in an attempt to cover it up. You didn't need to do any of that.
Yeah.
So when the government's so willing to lie to stop panic, for whatever reason they want to come up with, yes, absolutely. You're going to have a ton of people say, well, if that's what they're saying, I wonder what's really happening.
Right. I mean, if they're willing to, and I fall into that category. If the government's willing to give me
this,
what in the world are they not willing to give me? You know what I'm saying?
Because of the amount of lives they've been caught at.
Absolutely.
I 100% agree with all that. My point is, somewhere along the line, when you're going to come up with a fantastic story, if you want me to believe it, there's got to be some facts. There's very little, if any, facts on this one that exist. You can't use just the facts that the government's willing to lie to make up any story and say, well, this is my proof. The government will lie.
True. That's true. I get it. But from all stories generally come from a nugget of truth.
I 100% agree. And I think the nugget of truth in this one is Mr. Nichols desired to make a nice profit from a series of books. And he became a pretty good fiction author. That's my nugget of truth for this.
So I'm going to say that Project Montauk is not getting a thumbs up from Jerry tonight.
No, it's not.
I would have to agree. Thumbs down on Project Montauk. I don't care anything about it. I do care only in the respect that MK Ultra was a result of that. And that's a whole different show.
Was a result of what?
It came and was born out of Project Montauk.
I don't think so.
They're very similar. I can't imagine that they didn't.
The radar installation was similar to...
No. The things that your guy that was claiming. Yes.
Okay.
That I get. Oh,
your dogs love you tonight.
Man, I'm telling you what. And then what about Project Stargate? And Joe McMonagle?
Without doubt. I don't know about Joe McMonagle. I've not done enough research on him. But anytime the United States military and at the same time the Russian government is willing to spend this kind of money, they don't do it with no evidence that there's got to be something there. There was enough there for them to do it for 20 years time for the United States. I'm not for sure how long the Russians did it. We spent a lot of money for a long period of time. There's probably more than a nugget of truth there. Some of these people, whether it's Joe
McMonagle.
Whatever his name is. I would encourage you to figure out how to pronounce his name.
Well, no, I would encourage you to go watch some of the videos. He's kind of a gruff old guy. He comes across very real.
Yeah. I just think that there was a lot of nuggets of truth in that, and it absolutely would get a thumbs up from me.
Me too. And also tonight, we'll be donating a poodle to the nearest home. Unfortunately, you only get to keep it on Wednesdays.
Wife won't agree to more, right?
No, probably not. So thumbs up, Project Stargate. Thumbs down, Project Montauk. Man, that episode is really interesting. And if you'll stick around for us for just a few commercials, we have another great story to tell you.
Hi, this is Ed Locke with USA Mortgage. When it comes to buying a home, the process can be overwhelming and confusing. With so many options, it can be hard to know where to start. That's why it's important to work with a certified mortgage loan originator. I have the knowledge and expertise to guide you through the process and find the best mortgage option for you. I will work with you every step of the way to ensure that you are getting the best deal possible. So if you're looking to purchase or refinance, please reach out to me at 502-680-0953. So don't take on the stress of buying a home alone. Work with me and I will make your dream a reality. Trust the professionals and make your home buying experience a positive one. MLS ID 448908, DAS Acquisition Company, LLC, doing business as USA Mortgage, MLS ID 227262. This is not a commitment to lend. Additional terms and conditions apply. USA Mortgage is equal housing opportunity.
If you want us to review or rate your product on air, if you have suggestions for new episodes, awesome ghost stories, or anything else, please reach out to us. Our email address is newsworthywithstevenjerry@gmail.com. Our text number is area code 540-709-1318.
And now, back to the story. In 1922, a team of scientists visited Toronto General Hospital, where wards housed numerous diabetic children. Many of these children were in a comatose state and on the brink of death due to diabetic ketoacidosis. As a result of the amount of deaths, scientists moved swiftly and proceeded to inject the children with a brand new, purified extract of insulin. As they commenced injecting the final comatose child, the first one they injected started to regain consciousness. Subsequently, one by one, every one of the children emerged from their diabetic comas. During the early 1920s, Frederick Banting, Charles Best, and John McClode discovered insulin. Both Banting and McClode were awarded Nobel Prizes in 1923. James Collip played a crucial role in refining the insulin, which was instrumental in enabling it to become an effective application in diabetes treatment. Banting, the hero here, declined to have his name even included on the patent and opted to sell his stake to the University of Toronto for $1. He believed it unethical to seek profit from a discovery destined to save countless lives. Insulin, he said, belongs to the world, not to me. As of today, their invention has saved tens of millions of lives. And Jerry, if you can't see the light,
be the light.